TalkZone.com!
TalkZone presents the Geek Speak Radio Show with your hosts, Henry and Romo. Your top spot for everything entertainment and pop culture, including TV, movies, comics, casting news, and more. Now, here are your hosts, Henry and Romo.
Hello, everybody. We're here. Welcome to the Geek Speak Radio Show. How dare you tell everybody that I wasn't here because of the Packers' loss?
It's the truth. I mean...
No, it's not the truth.
It's not the truth.
You can't handle the truth. Here's the truth. The reason why I wasn't here was because, well, it was an emergency. Not that bad, but I had to take my mommy to the hospital. It was nothing bad. It just needed a checkup. She woke up with, sore foot.
Oh, I thought she had to take you to the hospital because they lost.
No, we won't get into details because some people may be eating, so I'm not going to get into the details as to why she was there, but she's fine. That's why we were there. But no, the Packers didn't lose, first of all.
They
gave away the game.
They did.
Because wait till they come to Lambeau.
Well, wait, they gave away the game because of the referee.
We'll pay the refs then. That's all I have to say. But that's where I was yesterday. I heard you guys yesterday.
Yeah.
90s movies, really?
Yeah, I mean, these two kids, you know, see how happy they were with their 90s movies and TV.
Kids, you being a sneeze older than them.
Yeah.
But I didn't watch cartoons that much. But I wasn't, I mean, I watched
You were
Seinfeld.
A kid once upon a time.
I know. But we all have to grow up, right?
It's a small world after all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's what happened. That's why I wasn't here yesterday. I'm going to talk about what you guys talked about yesterday. We'll bring up some of the 90s movies, all that stuff. We'll talk a little bit more about the Spirit of Halloween thing that we have coming up in a couple of days. And again, reminder, Chloe Moretz will be on with us talking about Let Me In. I've gotten some, they sent me some overture films. They sent me some exclusive clips just to get ready for the interview.
Yeah.
And I got to say, very, very good. I've seen the original. By the way, what's everybody doing after the show today? Nothing?
I got to go engineer somewhere.
Engineer?
Yeah.
What are you building, a bridge or what?
Yeah.
Or a train engineer?
Yeah.
That's where you're wearing that. Actually, no, that's Angel. You guys look alike. She looks like a referee today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anytime. You're all week. Anyway, so that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the Spirit of Halloween thing in the next hour or in a couple of segments, because we do have a couple of guests coming on this hour, so we probably won't have time to talk with ourselves.
Yeah.
Just for like a few seconds right now until our first guest comes on. But like I said, Overture Films, they sent me a couple of clips to get ready for Let Me In. I've seen the original.
Yeah.
You
read the book as well, right?
Yeah, a lot of people read the book. I'm rereading it again as we speak, not this second. But yeah, that's why I sound distracted. But I've seen the movie also. You may not like it because I know that you don't like movies that you have to read because it is subtitled. It's
called Let the Right One In, right?
Yes.
Yep.
And I haven't seen it, but I love subtitled movies. I'm ready to watch this one before I go and watch Let Me In. So I'm kind of excited to do this.
See, here's the thing. We're going to go see it on Friday after we talk to Chloe. I don't know if I should have you guys watch the original first and then go see it, or go see Let Me In and then experience the original.
Oh,
I know. I'm definitely going to check out the original first.
I mean, why not? It's the original.
Well, what I'm saying is the reason why not is because then it's going to
spoil.
Taint your the way you see
perception,
the picture. Because you're going to be
comparing it.
Yeah.
That's tough. Well, I might as well just watch it afterwards. I mean, I want to get my best opinion out when she's on the show. I don't want it to be so.
Yeah, and I'm not going to give too much away. These clips that I got, I actually got one that you won't see because it's a deleted scene.
Yeah.
Matt Reeves was kind enough to go ahead and let them send it out.
Yeah.
I won't give too much away. I won't spoil too much. I won't play the spoiler alert. But one thing I do like is it has some CG, but the original one had no CG in it. And it wasn't from, you know, thousands of years ago. There was CG, but it was just a great story and they didn't need CG. And this one, there is a little bit of CG. Because of what Chloe does, her character does, you have to use it. So it's there. It's not, you can kind of tell that it is, not really. I mean, you're kind of used to it now. You're kind of numb to the effects of CG now.
And unless it's done bad.
But what I'm seeing just from the clips is this movie is not a horror movie. It's kind of like The Last Exorcism that didn't scare you that much, Romo.
Yeah.
Same thing with Devil. It was kind of scary, but not really.
Yeah.
They actually have a message or something else behind, a real story to them, rather than just boo, make you jump.
Or gore, you know.
Let Me In kind of has the same thing. I see it as kind of a coming of age story set within the world of horror. And we'll talk to Chloe about that on Friday. Like I said, Chloe Moritz will be coming to talk to us on Friday about Let Me In as we kick off officially the Spirit of Halloween interview series for the month of October. Today, the spirit of something we really like, comic books.
Yes.
Yep.
We talk about that a lot here. Very big name today, as well as his dad, his brother. Adam Kubert, that name should mean something to you because you're a big X-Men fan.
Yeah, that's why you actually got him on the show. Why I should have brought my comic books.
And today's the Wednesday
release.
Well,
he can't reach through the phone.
Oh, I know.
Autograph him for you, you know.
But yeah. To see his work again, yeah, he's done a lot of stuff with X-Men, and I mean, good stuff, too.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking to Adam Kubert. As a matter of fact, let's do it right now. Adam, you there?
Yeah, I am.
How you doing? Thanks for coming on the show.
I'm all right. How are you?
Fantastic.
Good. Is this Damien I'm speaking to?
No, this is Henry. Damien is somewhere here in the studio.
Oh, okay. How you doing, Henry?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm great.
So, let's get into you, first of all, before we get into your work. Let's get to know Adam a little bit more. First thing I want to know, because of your family and the last name, it's kind of obvious, but how and when did you get into comic books? When did you first get interested in them?
Introduced into reading them or drawing them.
Read them first and then eventually drawing them.
Well, reading them, I'm sure your audience probably knows my father started drawing comics himself when he was 11, so I kind of grew up with these pamphlets all over the place. So I have been reading them all my life. As far as drawing them, I started drawing them professionally back in 1983, 84.
And when you decided to... attend school. Why your dad's school instead of just some other art school somewhere?
Well, I did go to another art school first. I actually went to Rochester Institute of Technology for medical illustration. I have a bachelor's degree in that. And I kind of wanted, the reason I studied that was first, I kind of want, you know, I knew I always wanted to draw. For a living. I loved it. I had an aptitude for it. But I kind of wanted to find my own way in the business do my own thing more or less. My dad had, these huge, footsteps to follow. And,
right.
I like science. I liked art. I applied for medical illustration. I got in. I have a degree in it. I started doing it, after I got out of school, and I didn't like it. All through school, I was drawing, I was drawing things out of my head. I, reading, comics and, and I thought, Jesus, why fight it? I know a great school where, the price is right. And, that's when I went through my dad's school. And that's really where I learned, how to draw for comics.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, a lot of our audience, they do know not only you, but your dad's work, of course. And if you don't, welcome back from Mars. And when you started your own career, how hard was it to live up to the Kubert name?
It wasn't hard at all. Because, my dad is so far beyond what, as far as I'm concerned, anyone in this business can do. It's just unattainable. So it really wasn't an issue for me.
Right. And so...
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, actually.
Okay.
Then I was going to ask you, your first job, I think you were 12 years old. I think I read in your bio, 12 years old when you first started your first real paying job, right?
Oh, my first real paying job was lettering. If you count that, that was when I was like 12 or 13.
Yeah, how did you get that?
Well, my dad was an editor up at DC, and he sat me down, showed me how to do it, and I had an aptitude for it, and I did it. It wasn't because I loved doing it. It wasn't because I was, so into comics. This was my back door into the business. It was a way to make money so I can buy a dirt bike. you know, instead of, you know, instead of having a paper route or you know, working wherever, that's what I did. I didn't really think much of it. I mean, I was touching, like, Russ Heath's, you know, original pages, lettering on that. I didn't really think much of it. If I did, I would have probably been a lot more nervous, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and we're talking to Adam Kubert, and we'll continue the conversation with Adam in just a few minutes. Before we do that, let's listen to the Buzz Report. We'll come back and get into Adam's work and also the school that he went to and now teaches at. So don't go anywhere. This is the Geek Speak Radio Show Buzz Report for Wednesday, September 29th. Here's what's buzzing right now. Who didn't see this one coming? All six Star Wars films will be re-released in theaters in 3D, starting with The Phantom Menace. Wow. In 2012 and following in order each year after that, depending on how Menace performs at the box office. The year-long break is needed because, according to George Lucas, that's how long it takes for the conversion process to be perfected for each movie. Right, a little too convenient, don't you think? We have the first casualty of the new fall TV season. Fox has officially canceled Lone Star after just two episodes. Starting next Monday, the 9 o'clock time slot will be filled with new episodes of the new season of Lie to Me. Word from NBC Studios is that Chuck is also on the bubble. Nine Inch Nails frontman Trent Reznor is about to turn the album Year Zero into a science fiction series on HBO. The album Year Zero was a musical chronicle criticizing contemporary policies of the United States government by presenting a dystopian vision of the year 2022. All right, this is getting a little crazy now. Tony Scott, Matt Reeves, Jonathan Liebsman, Duncan Jones, and Zack Snyder were supposedly being talked to by Christopher Nolan to direct Superman the Man of Steel. Yesterday, Romo mentioned that Darren Aronofsky was in the running as well. Today, we get news that Ben Affleck was also in the running to direct it. Yes, the director of The Town was, because Ben pulled himself out of the running, although he has some magic right now thanks to The Town's box office performance. With Darren Aronofsky's name drop also comes a rumor. Natalie Portman would be his first choice to play Lois Lane. Aronofsky and Natalie recently collaborated on Black Swan, which has been getting major buzz in the film festival circuit and is set to be released on December 1st. Remember, though, it is only a rumor. That's what's buzzing right now, and that's the Geek Speak Radio Show Buzz Report.
Geek Speak Radio Show will be right back. You're listening to TalkZone.com. Internet talk radio.
TalkZone.com.
Spoiler warning ahead.
Check it out.
You're listening to the Geek Speak Radio Show.
No one's going to stop it.
On TalkZone.com. Here's Henry and Romo.
And we're back. Here I am, Henry. Here, from a little bit. We're talking to Adam Kubert, artist, son of Joe Kubert, but the Andy also. So, Andy.
Adam.
Adam. Sorry.
That's okay. I'm used to it.
So let's continue the conversation. Let's get into your work now. Actually, like I mentioned before, you came on. Uh-huh. You're very well known for the Ultimate X-Men title. We'll get into that in a little bit.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about your first titles. I remember you on Wolverine. I remember that one because one of my favorite writers, Larry Hama, worked on that one. Also, you were also on, I believe, Hulk for a while, right?
Yeah, I was with Peter David.
Yeah, so tell everybody a little bit about your work on those titles.
Well, Wolverine, I started, that was one of my first jobs at Marvel back in, I think it was like 92, 93. I started on issue 75 of Wolverine. I didn't realize at the time how critical that issue was. I guess that was the first time he had, you know, the adamantium ripped out of him and he was right. Bone Claw Wolverine. And it figures, you know, I never got to draw. I don't think I ever drew that title with, you know, with the adamantium skeleton, which would have been cool, but this was, you know, this was absolutely just as cool.
Yeah.
And I worked with Larry Hama, and the stories, I mean, it was, I did it from issue 75 on and off through, I don't know, I think issue 102, something like that. And, you know, it was just an incredible time to be on the book and just a great experience. Hulk, I worked with Peter David. In fact, we both left the title at the same time. I forget what issue number it was, 459, 463, something like that. And I really forget how many issues we did together, maybe a dozen, maybe 16 issues. Again, these guys are, you know, are top writers, and the stories that they gave me were a blast to do.
Yeah, and then we came over to Ultimate X-Men, which was what everybody knows you as.
Right.
Who approached you initially to do Ultimate X-Men?
Bob Harris asked me if I wanted to do it. In fact, he had first run past some ideas of Ultimate Spider-Man, and I wasn't quite ready to start that because my other commitments hadn't been fulfilled. And then Ultimate X-Men happened. So that's when I went on there.
Yeah, when you were told, you know, the premise, which is pretty much a reboot, you can consider it.
Yeah.
What was your initial reaction when you heard that?
It sounds real cool. You know, again, if I really thought about the implications of some of the projects that I had, you know, or the profile that they were, I would have been it would have been hard to do. I just saw it as another job. Okay, we're going to, you know, redesign some of the X-Men. It's going to be, you know, out of continuity. It's not going to be within the regular continuity. Okay, let's do it. You know, working with some Scottish guy, you know, that hasn't written very much, Mark Miller. And, yeah. You know, it was, again, the guys I've been really fortunate in my career were the guys that I've worked with are just, you know, top creative people. Mark Miller wrote in such a way. The stories I was given was like a blockbuster movie, and you know, it was just a total blast to draw. Again, I didn't really sweat over it too much because I didn't realize how big a project it was. Nobody really understood that or knew that it would be as successful as it was.
Yeah, and like I said, my co-host Romo, he's definitely a big fan of the X-Men, right, Romo?
Sure I am.
thanks, Romo.
How's it going?
Good, how are you?
No problem. I'm doing good. Adam, I love your work. I just wanted to know, what inspired you as far as, like, continuing to be in your father's footsteps, to continue that legacy?
I don't really think of it so much as continuing a legacy as much as just totally enjoying the work that I'm doing. I don't think whatever career you choose, you're going to be long for that career or be successful at it unless it's something that you really love to do. I didn't sit down and think, oh, well, you know, I gotta, you know, I better continue. I can draw, so I better draw really well. drawing really well, it's not part of it. What's part of it is just loving to tell a story. Every script that I get, it's like trying to put a puzzle together. That's the way I approach it. How am I gonna do this one? To help dramatize this particular story, and to me that's a blast. And you know, fortunately, I haven't lost sight of you know what it is I enjoy doing. You know, and each time I get a new script, I'm nervous as hell. I get really scared because you know I don't know. I have new characters here. I got to draw. You know, new places I got to figure out. I guess it's more excitement, that's really what keeps me energized.
Hey, it's Angel, and you mentioned storylines. What was your most memorable storyline or character that you had fun working on?
Let me see. My most memorable I would say. It was an issue of Wolverine what issue was it? I think it was Wolverine number 90, where it was a fight between Wolverine and Sabretooth. And, anytime you have, you know, two major, major characters come together, it's going to be a big story. But my idea was, well, if the story is so big, let's do the pages big. You know, I'm a visual person, so that's kind of how I think. That story in particular, there was like, I don't know, like four or five gatefolds in it. And that one in particular, I mean, it took forever. You know, the pages, I think there was a double gatefold that was four pages wide. But that one in particular, I have, you know, very fond memories of working on.
Right, and we're talking to Adam Cube. Before we let you go, Adam, I got to ask you, what was it like? Let's talk about your alma mater. Tell me about, first of all, your time at the Joe Kubert School and also now you teaching there.
Right. Well, I went through my dad's school, which is in Dover, New Jersey, from 1981 to 1984. I went alongside my brother Andy. We both attended at the same time. We had my dad as an instructor, which, you know, he's the best instructor here. But, man, it was a pain in the butt because, you know, just imagine your dad, you know, being the head honcho and, you know, you're taking a class. I mean, you know, there's no such thing as not turning an assignment. But in that respect, you know, you're going to really push yourself to do the best you can. It was kind of funny because when Andy and I first started, we didn't want anybody to know who we were. So I think for the first, you know, at least in our own minds, for the first couple of months, you know, nobody knew who we were, and we preferred it that way.
They found out, was there any, you know, would they hate you guys or like, hey, well no wonder you guys are in
this
school?
It was just in our own mind. You know, they treated us, you know, the same as anybody else. And you know, that, you know, obviously that's the way we wanted it. But, you know, I guess maybe we've made more of it than it actually was, you know. So I got out of school in 84, and I started, I teach there now. I've been teaching at the school for 10 years, 3-year school. It's really the only school of its kind in the world. It's fully accredited. My dad teaches here. My brother Andy teaches here. And it's doing really, really well. And I'm, you know, I'm proud to be a part of it.
What classes specifically do you teach, Adam?
I teach the first year narrative art classes. Andy teaches the second year narrative art. My dad teaches the third year of narrative art.
And it's called the Joe Kubert School of Cartoon and Graphic Art, which I do have a link, by the way, on geekspeakradioshow.com. So you guys want to go check it out or you want to enroll, even better, go on there. Again, geekspeakradioshow.com. The links are all on there.
Perfect. Thank you.
No problem. Adam, before I do let you go, also preview, tell us what you can about the Astonishing Spider-Man Wolverine title that you are working on now.
Oh, man. This is a ride that I never thought I'd be taking. You know, I'm working with Jason Aaron, and he is just, I mean, outstanding is an understatement. The story, you know, I don't know what's going to be happening next in this story, but he is, you know, he's putting these characters through the paces without defiling the characters. I mean, the characters are totally remaining true to, you know, to who they are and who they've been over the years, and even more so. What's really interesting about this story is it's basically a time travel story. But it's all about the relationship between these two characters, between Wolverine and Spider-Man. And no matter what situation they're in, wherever they are, whether it's, you know, past, present, or future, their bantering and their relationship, remains constant. And Jason is really, I mean, he's an amazing writer. He is totally nailing these characters. And again, you know, I'm really having a blast on this.
Yeah, it is fun. I have actually read the first one of that. It is fun. Mm-hmm. So again, we're talking to Adam Kubert. Adam, thanks a lot for taking the time to talk to us this morning.
Oh, my pleasure, Henry. Nice talking
to you. You're welcome back anytime. And again, I also have the links on geekspeakradioshow.com to the school, the Joe Kubert School of Cartoon and Graphic Art. Adam, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you, Henry.
All right, talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
So there you go, Adam Kubert, visited by him. And again, like I said, the links are on there if you guys want to go and enroll, even better, or just take a look at their work. Again, Welcome Back from Mars, if you don't know about his, his dad Joe's work, as everybody does.
I mean, yeah, I actually remember Wolverine issue number 90, Wolverine versus Sabretooth, and the impact of that was, I mean, awesome. It was one of those things you got to get. I don't know where mine is. I think I probably traded it for another comic book.
Traded it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I wanted another.
Kids used to do that, you know, you trade. Yeah, kind of like you would trade food, trade comics for food sometimes.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like what Adam was saying a minute ago. You really don't know what you're doing. You, like George Lucas didn't know that he was doing Star Wars. I mean, he knew he was, but you know, he didn't know it was going to become what it became.
Yeah.
Same thing when he was working on the titles. He was. Same thing when you're a kid, when you're holding, you know, Spider-Man Amazing Fantasy number 15. You don't know what it's going to be. So like, oh, yeah, you have a Coke? Yeah, here, I'll trade you for the Coke. Why not? And now...
Years later, you're like...
Regretting.
Where's that kid that I traded that comic book to?
Yeah, I'm
all I got was a Coke, and now I have an empty bottle. He has, what, a book that's worth millions of dollars now?
Most likely.
I know.
So again, Joe Kubert School of Cartoon and Graphic Art is the name of the school. That's on GeekSpeakRadioShow.com. I'm going to take a little break. We're going to listen to a Buzz Report. Coming up next, we're going to have another interview, not with comic books. We're going to unofficially start the spirit of Halloween. You ever wondered what it's like to work and create the makeup and special effects on horror monster movies?
Yep, that sounds really, really cool.
Well, we'll see how cool it really is, because we're going to talk to somebody who does just that for a living when we come back. This is the Geek Speak Radio Show Buzz Report for Wednesday, September 29th. Here's what's buzzy now. Right now, Josh Holloway will be in Mission Impossible 4, which won't be a Mission Impossible and not a 4, but we'll have Tom Cruise, Ving Rhames, Simon Pegg, and Jeremy Renner. No word on what role Josh will be playing, should he choose to accept the mission. Sherlock Holmes 2 has finally found someone to fill Professor James Moriarty's shoes, and it is Jared Harris. Jared, the son of the late Richard Harris, is best known for his role as Lance Price on Mad Men, and of course, David Robert Jones in Fringe. RDJ and Jude Law are back, of course, and Stephen Fry will be joining the cast as Holmes' brother, Mike Roth. Sam Raimi's Stars Road Productions is developing three new TV shows for three different networks. The first is Smokers for Fox, about a blue-collar extraterrestrial hunters, to be written and produced by Brian K. Vaughan. Lancaster is a crime drama being developed for CBS about a Scotland Yard detective who joins the LAPD. And finally, an untitled ABC Studios project dealing with a female assistant DA who moonlights as a vigilante. On Saturday, October 23rd and Monday, October 25th, AMC Theaters will host a special screening of Back to the Future, celebrating the iconic film's 25th anniversary. Your ticket purchase will include a full-size poster commemorating the 25th anniversary limited release of the movie, and each AMC Theater hosting the event will be giving away special movie-related giveaways prior to the movie as part of the experience. The timing of these screenings happens to coincide with the release of the Back to the Future trilogy on Blu-ray on October 26th. Talk about back in time, huh? DC Comics has a new editor-in-chief and vice president, and it is industry vet Bob Harris. He had been editor-in-chief at Marvel from 1995 to 2000, which makes him the only person to hold the EIC title at the two biggest comic book publishers. That's what's buzzing right now, and that's the Geek Speak Radio Show Buzz Report.
Geek Speak Radio Show will be right back. Across the country and around the world, this is TalkZone.com, the best in Internet talk radio. Calling all fanboys. It's time to get back to the Geek Speak Radio Show on TalkZone.com with your hosts, Henry and Romo.
And here we are on the Geek Speak Radio Show. What is today? Today's Wednesday, right?
Yeah, it is.
Wednesday.
Yes, we're rated professionals. We're helping the mics on time. Yeah, I kind of lost track of time because I wasn't here yesterday. Again, I told you guys why. I want to explain why, because some of you may be eating, and I will spare you the gory details.
Speaking of gory.
However, exactly. Our next guest hopefully will not spare the gory details. Like I was saying as we finished the conversation with Adam Kubert a few seconds ago, you ever guys ever wonder what it's like to work on the special effects in a movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I think all the time when I'm actually watching a movie, especially like if I'm watching Saw, or
all the nasty hostile movies.
Yeah, it's
nasty.
Nasty in a good way.
I call them phenomenal.
Yeah, but even going back to like your average monsters or even zombie movies, you know, the makeup that they have to do for that is just wonderful. I've never, or even the special effects too.
I mean, I remember mentioning this to Henry. I was watching a documentary on Nightmare on Elm Street, and the inspiration for Freddy's face was pizza, cheese pizza. It's kind of cool and creepy, okay. And
no, makes I'm not gonna have that for lunch. For pizza.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
But anyway, somebody who does do that on a regular basis is Ed Martinez. He's here in the San Francisco Bay Area. Also, Ed, are you on the phone yet?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Ed, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. So, before we get into your work, let me ask you, what got you interested in special effects?
Oh, I mean, you know, like many fans of genres and stuff, you know, I was influenced as a very young person, you know, watching stuff like the original King Kong, you know, the black and white King Kong on TV. And right. I'm a huge stop motion animation fan of Willis O'Brien and Ray Harryhausen. And, you know, I think that the, you know, the same story has been said, you know, by many effects artists, you know, Rick Baker, Rob Bottin, you know, that the early films, you know, like King Kong and, you know, Mighty Joe Young and, you know, the classic special effects films, you know, were a big influence, you know, the classic Frankenstein, the Dracula, the Mummy, the Wolfman, you know, all those universal horrors are, you know, very close to my heart. And, you know, early magazines too, you know, like Famous Monsters of Filmland, you know, I grew up in the 70s and, you know, early 80s is when I first started dabbling in this kind of stuff. And, you know, it's just a love. I mean, I've ever since I was a child, you know, and Star Trek and Star Wars, of course, you know, being here in the Bay Area, you know, I was in the audience, you know, for the very first screening at the Coronet Theater, you know, in May 25th, you know, in the very first day of Star Wars. You know, I actually...
Yeah, I think I was there with you, actually. I was there also.
I know, too bad the Coronet's gone. You know, it's like such memories, yeah. You know, but I mean, people like Bob Wilkins, you know, Creature Features here in the Bay Area, you know, was a huge influence on me. You know, Channel 2, you know, for 10 years or so, you know, ran, you know, Creature Features every Friday and Saturday nights, and I was a guest on those shows. You know, I would come on and promote, you know, conventions here locally in the Bay Area. Conventions were another big thing for me, you know, that got me started and got me interested in this, you know, entering the costume contests. And, you know, Halloween, of course, is huge. It's my, I mean, my birthday is actually, it's this Saturday, but I've always, you know, celebrated Halloween as my birthday.
Yeah. And what was your, how did you, what was your first, not professional movie project, but what were your first project that you worked on?
Well, you know, probably as a kid, you know, just like making decorations and my own homemade Halloween costumes and things like that, you know, for the house. And, you know, when I was in grade school and stuff, I was given, you know, in charge of building a haunted house, you know, for the elementary school and, you know, that sort of thing, you know, growing up. And then here in the Bay Area, you know, there's the Spirit Store chain. And back when there was only one location, you know, right here in my town, you know, here in Hayward, there, you know, the man who ran the Spirit Store chain, you know, was somebody I met, you know, before he even started the Spirit Store chain. He had just this little clothing store in Castro Valley, and he started putting, you know, Halloween stores together, you know, at the Southland Mall. And I met up with him, and he hired me to be an employee of his store. And I used to do, you know, makeup and sell the makeup and, you know, make masks and sell masks and, you know, do the window displays and all that sort of thing. So, you know, one of my first jobs, you know, was working at a Halloween, you know, costume shop, you know.
Yeah, so that would be like, for example, one of my co-hosts here, she loves Mickey Mouse and everything Disney, so it would be like her working at Disneyland. That's what it was like for you.
Yeah, working absolutely. At the store. Yeah, I was like a kid in a candy store, you know. To be able to make money doing what you love is such a blessing, you know.
Yeah. And so what was your first effects job in the movie?
Well, professionally, when I first started doing this, you know, like right around high school age and stuff like that, you know, I got involved with like the plays at school. And luckily, you know, one of the teachers, you know, who was in charge, you know, in high school of the drama, you know, classes and stuff like that, gave me the opportunity. You know, we looked at the makeup box and it was just destroyed, you know, from the previous productions. And she said, well, let's go to the store, you know, the makeup store, and you can buy up all the stuff you need for the next, you know, productions and everything. And so I was growing nuts, you know, buying all the crepe hair and the latex and the, you know, spirit gum and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I got a hold of the Dick Smith Movie Monster Makeup Manual, you know, which was available through the back, you know, ads in, you know, Famous Monsters of Filmland. And that was like the Bible. I mean, it taught me everything, you know, the early, you know, young kid age of being able to make wounds and scars and, you know, fangs and, you know, all that kind of stuff, you know. So the first real film project, you know, I mean, I was working on a few smaller projects like music videos and commercials on a couple of companies here, you know, here in the Bay Area. They had, you know, production companies, and, you know, I was, you know, very lucky, you know, to get a couple of jobs, you know, here and there, just as part of a crew of people doing that. But then my first feature film job, 35 millimeter feature film job, where I was the director of special effects, you know, I was given the job of, you know, finding other crew people to help work under me, as well as, you know, to work directly with the director and the producers and, you know, figure out, you know, like how to do the effects and, you know, everything. That was a film, a zombie film, actually. My very first feature film was a zombie film. It's called The Dead Pit. And it came out on DVD about a year ago as a two-disc special disc, you know, director's commentary. And I provided a bunch of behind-the-scenes material. And that was my first feature film, you know. And back in the day, you know, back when mom-and-pop video stores were all the rage and, you know, you didn't have the Internet like we do today. You know, you couldn't download things. It was just, you know, you either went to the movie theaters or drive-ins or, you know, the mom-and-pop VHS, you know, videos was it, you know. And this film, you know, played regionally, you know, in movie theaters and a few, you know, drive-ins and things like that. But, you know, it pretty much went direct to VHS video, you know, after that, you know. And I was written about in Fangoria magazine and stuff, too.
Yeah, that had to be the coolest for you.
Absolutely. I got interviewed, you know, a local writer was working for Fangoria, and he came to my home and sat in my living room and did this, you know, multiple-hour interview. And, you know, it appeared in several issues of Fangoria and Gore Zone magazine, and they even made, like, posters, like fold-out posters of that lead, you know, villain character, Dr. Ramses, evil Dr. Ramses, you know, in the magazines. They had these like foldouts that you could get, you know, on the front and on the back of a poster, and a couple of those were done of my character, Dr. Ramses.
Yeah, and besides the manual that you found, where do you get your inspiration for, you know, like you said, you doing the wounds, doing all the monsters?
Well,
that you
other
create,
than
where do you get
first,
the inspiration for that?
You know, other than that first Dick Smith monster makeup manual, you know, there was a couple of books that you could get, you know, at the, like in my high school's library, you know, there was this classic, you know, book on stage makeup called, you know, Stage Makeup, you know, by Richard Corson. And it's been in multiple, you know, reprints, you know, more recent, you know, with color, you know, photos and things like that. But that had the basics, you know, of how to do like a life cast and how to make, you know, appliances, you know, like rubber noses and, you know, things like that, you know. And other than that book and the Dick Smith book, I mean, back in those days in the early 70s and stuff, there was very few places. It's not like today. There's no, you know, there was no real schools except for Los Angeles. Like if you could afford to go to UCLA or something, there might be some classes on makeup and things like that. But today there are specialized schools, and I teach at a couple of them, in fact, that teach you specifics on how to do, you know, creatures, you know, and monsters and zombies and things like that, that, you know, all you could find was like how to do, you know, beauty makeup, you know, how to put on lipstick and blush and stuff like that. And these courses, you know, are, it's so great for today's, you know, people, you know, the young people starting out today. I didn't have the benefit of the videos and the DVDs and the YouTube, you know, stuff and the, all these websites and everything. And I mean, it's a whole new world today. There's so much information out there. You know, if you want to learn how to do this kind of stuff, there's no excuse. You know, there's so much information available.
Right, and we're talking to Ada Martinez, FX artist and teacher, as you mentioned. We'll get into that, the teaching side. When we come back, let's listen to a Buzz Report again and continue the conversation with Ada Martinez. This is the Geek Speak Radio Show Buzz Report for Wednesday, September 29th. Here's what's buzzing right now. Who didn't see this one coming? All six Star Wars films will be re-released in theaters in 3D, starting with The Phantom Menace. Wow. In 2012 and following in order each year after that, depending on how Menace performs at the box office. The year-long break is needed because, according to George Lucas, that's how long it takes for the conversion process to be perfected for each movie. Right, a little too convenient, don't you think? We have the first casualty of the new fall TV season. Fox has officially canceled Lone Star after just two episodes. Starting next Monday, the 9 o'clock time slot will be filled with new episodes of the new season of Lie to Me. Word from NBC Studios is that Chuck is also on the bubble. Nine Inch Nails frontman Trent Reznor is about to turn the album Year Zero into a science fiction series on HBO. The album Year Zero was a musical chronicle criticizing contemporary policies of the United States government by presenting a dystopian vision of the year 2022. All right, this is getting a little crazy now. Tony Scott, Matt Reeves, Jonathan Liebsman, Duncan Jones, and Zack Snyder were supposedly being talked to by Christopher Nolan to direct Superman the Man of Steel. Yesterday, Romo mentioned that Darren Aronofsky was in the running as well. Today, we get news that Ben Affleck was also in the running to direct it. Yes, the director of The Town was, because Ben pulled himself out of the running, although he has some magic right now thanks to The Town's box office performance. With Darren Aronofsky's name drop also comes a rumor. Natalie Portman would be his first choice to play Lois Lane. Aronofsky and Natalie recently collaborated on Black Swan, which has been getting major buzz in the film festival circuit and is set to be released on December 1st. Remember, though, it is only a rumor. That's what's buzzing right now, and that's the Geek Speak Radio Show Buzz Report.
Geek Speak Radio Show will be right back. The website that gives you some real excitement without charging you by the minute.
It really is a lot of fun.
TalkZone.com.
All right, look, here's the deal.
And now, more of the Geek Speak Radio Show on TalkZone.com.
I forgot to introduce you to...
Here's Henry and Romo.
And here we are. Oh, Henry, welcome back to the Geek Speak Radio Show. Talking to Ed Martinez, who's an FX artist and teacher. Let's get into a little bit more of the FX artist and the teaching side of it. Ed, you there?
Yes.
So, let's get into, like I said, your work a little bit more. Before I do, let me ask you about somebody else's work. You mentioned Ray Harryhausen. You were a big fan of him. What'd you think, if you saw it, of the Clash of the Titans remake that came out earlier this year?
Oh, well...
Yeah, that was our reaction too.
I don't want to say anything, you know, too bad about it.
Yeah, I think you just did, actually. Not bad, but I mean, just by that's usually everybody's reaction when we bring those remakes up is.
I'm a big,
okay.
You know, fan of practical effects. You know, the old fashioned, you know, props, makeup. You know, computer stuff is great for certain things, but. You know, I think that the best is the blending of the two, you know, using practical effects with computer effects, you know, to remove wires or, you know, to do something that's impossible any other way.
Yeah, that actually kind of leads to another question I wanted to ask you, and I hope the answer is no, but let me ask you anyway. Do you think there will ever be a time, because of this CGI stuff going on, when artists like you will not be needed?
No, never. I think that, you know, art is in the mind, you know, it's whether you're using, it's just tools, you know, whether you're using a computer for your tool or whether you're using clay and sculpting tools in your hands, it's all, you know, coming from an artist. Right. So there's always going to be artists necessary, you know, drawing, you know, whether you use a computer to draw with or whether you use a paper and a pencil or, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, is there one movie, you mentioned the King Kong also, is there one movie in particular where you really, really love the effects working?
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously the original King Kong is probably, I mean, you know, people ask me, you know, if you were on a desert island, you could only bring, you know, like different numbers, like 5 or 10 or, you know, 15 or 20 films or whatever, you know, what would those lists be, you know? And, you know, it's just, that's such a hard question because there's so many great films, but definitely, you know, if it was a short list, you know, like King Kong, 2001 A Space Odyssey, you know, then it starts getting more difficult, you know, like Star Wars, of course, the original first Star Wars, you know, but maybe Planet of the Apes. I mean, it's that right there, I start having difficulty. I start having, like, if I had 10, okay, that's easier. Now I can put, you know, Star Trek, Wizard of Oz, you know what I mean? But, I mean, just there's just so many great films. And, of course, I love non-genre stuff, too, like Citizen Kane and, you know, Gone with the Wind. So, I mean, there's some of those, you know, the original old effects, you know, in some of those films, you know, like the old pirate movies and things like that where they had enormous miniatures, or Godzilla. I'm a huge Japanese fan as well. I mean, I used to write for Japanese magazines on special effects, and I used to go in the 80s. go back and forth, you know, to Japan and spend time there, you know, because I wrote for a Japanese magazine and, you know, was involved with special effects exhibitions where a lot of Americans, you know, like Chris Wallace and Bob Burns and people like that, you know, the guy that did the original Evil Dead, Tom Sullivan, you know, all traveled to Japan with me and they put on an exhibit, you know, and I was the coordinator for the exhibit. And so, you know, Japanese stuff like Godzilla and Mothra and Ghidorah and, you know, Ultraman, you know, like all that stuff is also huge to me, you know.
Hey, Ed, it's Angel. I just had a question about how long is the process to transform, you know, a person into a creature, a monster, or whatever the case may be, depending on the project you have? How long does it take?
Wow, that's, you know, it so varies, you know, depending upon from, you know, like whatever the thing is, you know, like if you're making, you know, Predator or Alien or Creature from the Black Lagoon or whatever, of course that's going to take months, you know, to make all the body molds. And, you know, the first step in any creature making, you know, if it's going to fit a specific actor, you got to mold that person. You got to mold their face, you got to mold their hands, you got to mold their body. And that's the beginning, you know, of the whole process, the life casting. And, you know, the next step after you produce, you know, a positive copy of that person, either in fiberglass or plaster or whatever, is to do all the clay sculpting. And, but before that, you know, they have to design it, you know, draw it out on paper, make, you know, clay maquettes, you know, small models, you know, so that everybody can look at it in three dimension and sign off and decide, you know, like, yes, okay, that's good. We're going to go with that design, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it just really depends, you know. I mean, people ask me that question all the time, and there is no answer. You know, you got to give them, you know, like, okay, you know, what are the parameters? You know, give me the script, you know, let me look at the design, you know, then I can tell you, you know.
Mm-hmm. And how about when someone's in a chair, an actor, actors are in the chair, and they have to wait knowing that, oh, I have to put makeup's going to... How? I mean, for me, it would be hard.
It's multiple hours in the chair. I mean, after all the processes of the molds are done, and the sculptures are done, and the castings are made, and the pieces are ready and painted, once that actor sits in the chair, you know, that's just one spot, you know, one part, you know, after 3, 4, or 5 hours or whatever, when they're done, you know, then they got to go on set and perform in all this stuff, you know, sometimes 12, 15 hour days, you know, underneath all that makeup. And then the removal process, you know, again, you know, just, it takes almost as long to take it off sometimes as it does to put it on, because if you're not careful, if you don't remove it very carefully with the proper materials, you can damage the person's skin. And often, you know, big name actors especially, they don't want anything to happen to their face or their skin, because that's how they make their living, you know.
Right. And Ed, you also know you teach at the Academy of Arts and the Academy of Cosmetic Arts. So tell everybody a little bit about them.
Yeah. Well, if you don't mind, you know, I'll just mention, you know, the web address, you know, if anybody's interested, you know, can go look it up, you know, on the internet and see, you know, if they're interested in taking classes. And, you know, I teach seminars and, you know, give individual lessons and, you know, make custom stuff, you know, for people, for masks, you know, Halloween, you know, I've done, you know, by appointment, you know, like entire, you know, body painting jobs and stuff like that for somebody to go out to a party or the exotic erotic or whatever. But, you know, go to www.academyofcosmeticarts.com. All one word. Academy of Cosmetic Arts is all one word. For our website to go look at the school and see what is offered there. And then, of course, you can always contact me and ask questions. And I'm on Facebook as well. If you wanted to find me on Facebook, I'm, you know, my icon.
I linked that up actually on geekspeakradioshow.com. Your Facebook is linked on there. So if you guys want to go there,
cool.
There it is.
There you go. Yeah, and I have the robot from Lost in Space as my buddy in the photo. I am a true geek.
Yeah, actually, yesterday when you were on the phone with Damien, I said it was the Lost in Space robot, and you corrected me. You said, no, it's not, actually. A lot of people think it is.
Actually, it's the other way around. I think somebody asked, is it the robot from Lost in Space? I mean, is it the robot from Forbidden Planet? You know, Robbie the robot.
Yeah.
Robbie the robot is probably more famous than the robot from Lost in Space, but the robot from Lost in Space was actually designed by the same man, Bob Kinoshita, who years ago in San Jose, I worked on a film, a martial art film, and he was the art director. He had been taken out of retirement. You know, he was friends with the Chinese company that was producing this martial arts film down in San Jose, and I got to work in the art department with him. He was the art director, and man, what an opportunity. I brought my you know, my little Robbie the Robot toy. I have like an 18-inch figure and my Lost in Space figure too. They're both from Japan and they both talk and everything. And I brought them and he signed them for me and stuff like that. And I believe, you know, if I'm not mistaken, I believe he has passed away now, but he was a genius. You know, he designed all kinds of stuff for Forbidden Planet, the sets, the costume, you know, the construction of the spacecrafts, you know, the Robbie, you know, and then of course later in Lost in Space, he designed the robot from Lost in Space. That's why they're kind of brothers. They were in, you know, Robbie was in several episodes of Lost in Space as well, you know, but yeah, Robbie is definitely the famouser of the two, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, and now before I let you go, give us one more time the website for the Academy.
Oh, sure. The website is www.academyofcosmeticarts.com. And also another email if you wanted to check is rosehill@makeupcrew.com. That's the name of the woman who owns the school. And I teach at the Academy of Art University in San Francisco as well, the one with all the black buses and everything. And, yeah. And like I said, you know, I give seminars and, you know, teach private lessons and give, you know, do stuff for people on custom order as well, you know.
Yeah, and after the show, I'll put up that link for the Academy on Geek Speak Radio show.
Oh, thank you.
As well as
appreciate
the Facebook is already up there.
Cool.
And
thank you.
Before I let you go, I'm going to ask you one last question. We're
sure.
going to start officially on this Friday what we're going to call the Spirit of Halloween interviews, and that is basically bringing back what Halloween really means to everybody. It's kind of been perverted a little in my eyes, Halloween, and it's not really considered, you know, like you and I and Angel, it's also her favorite holiday.
Oh,
as
yeah.
for us.
Bigger
like
than
you,
Christmas.
Yeah. And so let me ask you, Ed, what does Halloween mean to you?
It's my birthday, basically. I mean, you know, I was born in October, and I would never always, you know, be able to celebrate. You know, I would rarely have a party or a cake or anything on my birthday on the 2nd. I would always wait and celebrate it on Halloween because, gosh, you know, there's parties everywhere. You get to dress up. I mean, you know, decorate your house. You know, I mean, go to the, you know, like all these things, you know, that are available, all these haunts, you know, like the Pirates of Emerson, and, you know, there's one in San Leandro this year, you know, that's at the Bayfair Mall, and, you know, just going to all these things, you know, like the pumpkin patches, and, you know, visiting people's homes that are really overly decorated and stuff, you know. That's what Halloween is about, you know, celebrating it, you know, the really expensive way, you know, like nowadays, like, it's been so commercialized, you know, that it's almost like Christmas. I mean, if you were to look at the charts and graphs, you know, about how much money is being spent and how much is made, I saw a quote the other day that said $2 billion is being spent annually on candy alone for Halloween. You know, can you imagine that? You know, $2 billion, you know? And, you know, that's just crazy. You know, it's like candy, you know? But, you know, I
probably another $2 billion on the dentist afterwards.
But I, you know, I love Halloween because of the spirit. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people who, you know, are taking things, you know, a little too seriously, like religious groups and stuff that think that it's about
right.
demons and Satanism and blah, blah. It's not, you know, it's about fun. It's about, you know, from the earliest days, if we all go back, you know, in history, you know, the Samhain and the harvest festivals and, you know, that sort of thing, you know, is where it all started. But, you know, in America especially, you know, we have made Halloween into our own special holiday. I mean, I've spent time in places like Japan and stuff, and they don't celebrate Halloween. They don't know about going trick-or-treating or putting on masks and scaring people or making haunted houses or whatever, but we've kind of brought it to them. Back in the 80s, I brought, you know, all these special effects props and models and creatures and stuff to Japan with some of their creators, and they put on in a gigantic department store like we have, you know, here, you know, Macy's and Penny's and stuff. You know, they have these huge mall department stores indoors, you know, with multi-levels, and they took over like an entire level and turned it into a gigantic haunted house with, you know, vignette scenes like from Evil Dead, from, you know, like the old, you know, the remake of the Twilight Zone, the movie with the guy in the plane, you know, John Lithgow looking out the window, and there's a creature on the wing, you know, that's like, yeah. You know, I mean, they recreated that with lightning and thunder outside. They had like an interior of a jet plane, you know, and stuff. And it was like going into a haunted house where each scene you visit, you know, is like an entire movie, like a little scene from that movie, you know. And the Japanese didn't know about this kind of thing, and they loved it. They, you know, in the 80s, they embraced, you know, the horror films like Evil Dead and, you know, Scanners and stuff like that. And it's huge. I mean, of course, they have their own traditions of the, you know, the yokai and, you know, and in China, you know, the Gyeongsi hopping vampires and things like that, you know. So all over the world, you know, there's mythology and creatures and stuff. But in America, you know, we've made Halloween, you know, our sort of own thing, you know, and there's a lot of countries like Japan and stuff who've started to adopt it, you know, who love it, you know, love American movies and everything so much that they just have kind of made it their own now, too.
Right, and that's exactly what that's going to be about. So, Ed Martinez, thanks a lot for taking the time out to talk to us this morning.
Oh, you're welcome. I really enjoyed it. I love your show. I've been listening to some of the other episodes on archives and stuff, and I'm planning to pass this around to a lot of my friends and tell them.
Yeah, thanks a lot. We appreciate that.
Sure.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you back again, especially during the month of Halloween.
Excellent.
Happy early birthday to you and birthday
thank
month,
you, thank
actually.
You. And happy Halloween early to all of you on your staff and all of the listeners.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Ed. So there you go. Have a good one, Ed. We're going to take a little break right now. When we come back, it'll be just us. We'll talk probably more Halloween, like I said, and some other things. So we'll be back. Don't go anywhere.
Geek Speak Radio Show will be right back.